Georgia's offense with that big giant red question mark.
Billy, you had to win the USF game because you might not get many more wins. There aren't a whole lot of easy wins left on the schedule. Do you have any concerns about the Georgia offensive line?
Is this a shoe-throwing situation all over again?
Yeah. Welcome back to another episode of the Southern Football Report, Season 2, Week 3, and we are back at it once again. Thank you so much to all of our listeners that are tuning in and the feedback we're getting, Kyle. Isn't that cool?
That's awesome. I love it.
It's awesome when somebody says, hey, man, I like y'all's show, or hey, I heard you on the radio, or hey, I like your podcast. That's just a cool feeling.
Yeah, it's neat. It's neat. Got several texts Saturday morning. That's you on the radio?
Yeah. Just a couple of dudes talking football.
That's
man.
Right.
And we love it. Listen, I'll say this too, by the way, and I've been wanting to find a good time to say this. I want to be clear. Like, I'm no like X's and O's guy when it comes to football. I didn't coach the game besides, you know, well,
we had a pretty good night last night.
Maybe we do coach the game. The Big Oak Bandits are 1-0 on the season. That's Kyle and I helping a bunch of, what, I guess 8 and 9 year old
boys.
Yeah,
something like that.
With flag football. That was a fun game last night.
That was fun. We could break it down. The Big Oak Bandits are 1-0.
That's right. That's right. Looked good doing it. Pitching a shutout.
That's right.
But I do understand people, and I understand trends, and I understand how things, you know, I guess you would say, like, you know, the trajectory of how things work. And that's really the perspective I like to bring to the game and to talking about football. Now, you've got a little bit more intimate knowledge of the sport, played it longer than I did.
Sure.
Your dad was a high school coach, and it still is.
Yeah.
And so you've been around the game even more than most of us out there have. But ultimately, we're just some dudes talking football, man.
And just love it.
Yeah.
Just love it. Love to be involved in it. Love to watch it. Love to read about it. You know, spend probably too much time reading about it and thinking about it. But it sure is a fun time. You know, football is the shortest season of any sport that there is out there. So we have to make the most of the games we get to watch and see.
Thankfully, at both of our houses, like, our spouses don't mind watching football.
Yeah, my spouse, I have to give her a shout out. She needs some credit for something I said last week. And so I'll do my best to give her credit where credit is due in future podcasts. But, yeah, my wife loves football.
Yeah. Mine does, too. And so we don't get in trouble for watching it or anything.
That's right.
Like
even
that.
Don't get in trouble for spending time up here doing a podcast.
Right. Yeah. So, anyway, we are short one today.
Yeah.
We are short our Brian Howell. Normally, Brian is sitting directly across from me in the studio. He's traveling for work.
Yeah, somebody's got to work.
Yeah, I mean, this is all just fun for us. And so we're going to miss Brian Howell. And by the way, may get a reappearance on the Southern Football Report from our friend Brian Wynn.
Snake Man's coming back, maybe.
The Snake Man has been busy.
Yeah.
He opened up his storefront I think it's been about a year now.
Right at a year.
And he's doing really well, working really hard. And so, but we're going to get Brian Wynn back on the podcast here.
Absolutely.
Before long.
Looking forward to it.
All right. So what do you say we just dive right
Let's
on in?
Let's get into it.
All right. As we do here on the Southern Football Report each week, we like to do a little review before we do our preview. Let's start. I wrote down several games, three of which I think we should review for just big picture reasons.
Yeah.
The other two were to me, the two biggest games of the weekend. Let's start with the big picture games. So in that category, I had games against these are three big teams against three, you know, smaller column directional schools, column, you know.
Cupcakes.
There you go. Let's start with Bama versus UL Monroe. So the big question mark, Kyle, was, you know, is Bama toast? Is Bama going to come out and play well against UL Monroe after the heartbreaking loss to Florida State? Is UL Monroe going to show us a repeat of 2007 when they beat Nick Saban in his first year?
It was interesting that was the team they were playing after all the crazy talk throughout the last week about, you know, the last time Bama lost a game like that was UL Monroe. And it was interesting. You know, they kind of came out, and for lack of a better term, exercised some demons.
Yeah.
Did what they were supposed to do without Ryan Williams, right, being out with a concussion. you know, I think they took care of business. It was probably a little bit of a personal, you know, they took some of the comments personal. I'm sure DeBoer did. You probably saw some of the stuff on Twitter and Instagram where Tim Keenan came up and was kind of giving DeBoer a pep talk in his ear. And you don't know what was said, but it was kind of popular, you know, throughout the week last week or this past week after seeing it at the game. But, you know, did what they're supposed to do. I think what everybody kind of expected. I'm not sure 70 plus points was expected, but, you know, I think Bama fans probably feel a little bit better about themselves. But this week we get back to a Power 5 team, even though it is Wisconsin. What does that look like? We'll see what happens. But, you know, good on them for, you know, doing what they're supposed to.
Was it 73 to nothing?
Nothing, yeah.
So you pitch a shutout, which is, I mean.
That's hard to anybody.
Everybody plays directional schools at some point during the year.
And people score.
Yeah. And so, you know, to score 70-something points is really tough at any level of football.
Right.
We saw it at the high school level not long ago.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
You know, to score 70 points in a four-quarter game to shut out your opponent. If I'm not mistaken, the last time my favorite team shut somebody out was like 2000 and I want to say like 18 or something. So shutouts don't come along.
No. You know, you do that in today's college football. I mean, those kids at UL Monroe, they're getting paid too. I mean, they have NIL too.
Right.
You know, and they're good athletes too. And so, you know, some of them, you may see some of those guys transfer into a Bama next year, to a Georgia, to a Florida State. You know, these bigger schools, they're good athletes. So when you can put 70 on somebody, you can hold somebody to 0 points, pat yourself on the back, just know there's bigger and badder dudes coming down the street.
Right. So I saw something, I think it was today, where DeBoer's like 9-1 when he wears the black hoodie.
Oh, maybe he'll have it on this week.
And like 4-5 when he wears
the red. He wore the black hoodie against Georgia last year. Maybe there's something to it.
Maybe, you know, Norvell wore all black before the Alabama game, so.
Get him the hoodie.
Yeah. If I'm an Alabama fan, I'm like, dude, you never have to wear a polo. You remember that fuss?
They were really on him. I guess they had lost it happened later in the year because they were kind of feeling themselves after Georgia, but then, like, they had a few tough games, and it was like, this guy doesn't even wear a polo shirt.
Yeah. You know? Does he take this job seriously?
Yeah.
But yeah, good on Alabama. I will say my perspective on the Wisconsin game is now a lot different than it was after the Florida State game. Maybe I underestimated Alabama after that game, the Florida State game. We'll see.
Yeah, you'll definitely see in 2 weeks. Well, 3 weeks.
Right.
I've read a little bit about Wisconsin. Not real impressed with what I've read. But, you know, like I said, they get paid too.
That game's at home for Alabama?
Home for Alabama. They were at Wisconsin last year. A little bit of a struggle early last year for Alabama in that game. And we'll get into it later. But yeah, I think this week was just all about Bama and them doing what they were supposed to do. And good on them for taking care of business.
Yeah. You know, a W is a W. If you win by 70, if you win by 20, or whatever the final, you know, score is, a win's a win. I think Dom said that in Fast and the Furious.
Well, don't say that to the Georgia fans.
Well, that's where I was going. So Georgia played Austin Peay, and there was a little consternation, I think, with some Georgia fans about execution maybe down at the goal line and things like that. Tell me what those of us that didn't watch the Georgia game, what did we miss in that one, Kyle?
If you remember Nicholls State from 2016, I guess it was that game made over. You know, it was – now, I think Austin Peay did some stuff that maybe – threw a wrinkle in some things, but still, you're Georgia, they're Austin Peay, you take care of business, right? You can score from the 1 yard line. You can score from the 5 yard line. You ought not have to try any kind of trickeration or, you know, bootlegs out of the backfield to get a yard, right? You've got guys that are supposed to be able to push people around. And I think that was where the frustration really grew. And then right out of that, you come into a 2 hour rain delay. I would not have wanted to seeing Kirby on the sideline prior to that. I would not have wanted to be in that locker room for 2 hours with Kirby. Different if you're up by 35 at half. You can kind of have a good time. But, you know, you have a poor showing going into half, not getting the ball in from the one. Now, they did come out and respond pretty well on their first drive out of the half. I'll admit it. During the game, I was texting y'all. I was texting some other friends. If you can't throw the ball down the field, you need to sit on the bench. If you're not going to throw it down the field, you know, that's it. There's no place for you here. And the more I've read and watched and seen, it seems like that's what Austin Peay was giving Georgia.
Okay.
They had their safeties that 18 yards. They had their corners at 9 yards. Well, you've got Colby Young and Zachariah Branch. Why wouldn't you give them the ball and get them in space,
right?
And see what they can do. You're not going to see that from other teams. You won't see that from Tennessee. You certainly won't see it from Bama. You're not going to see it from Texas. They're going to come up. They're going to man you up and see, can you throw it down the field?
Right.
But it seemed like in review, right? And this is called the review section. In review, Austin Peay was asking Georgia to throw it short, let them come make a tackle. And they did a good job of it, and it kind of held Georgia back a little bit. So, you know, I don't know. It's still that same old, there's a question mark for Georgia's offense. And we'll see, can they respond when there's a team capable of stopping them? I don't think there was ever a point in the game where Georgia fans were like, oh, gosh.
Right.
We're not going to beat Austin Peay.
Right.
You know.
You weren't down 16-0 at halftime like Clemson was.
Right. It wasn't that. Right. You weren't like, oh, man, like this could actually happen. You never felt that way. But there was some frustration, like we should be scoring 70 points like Alabama, right? Or like Florida State's doing while we're on TV at the same time. Florida State's scoring 77 points.
Yeah, something like 77,
You know, you need something like that. You need 45-7 like you had against Marshall, and you feel better. It's one of those things.
Do you have any concerns about the Georgia offensive line?
You know, last week was hard to tell because you had two starters out.
Okay.
That all indications are they should be back this week, right? So you don't know if last week was an SEC game, would they have played?
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Load management.
Right. It was more of, hey, let's give them 10 more days to heal up, you know, before they get back into a full swing of practice. It seems like this week they're practicing. That's Juan Gaston and Ernest Green. So, you know, you hope that that's part of it because they haven't had a consistent offensive line even since the 16th play of the season. And that was a story last year. It's constant injuries, constant turnover. I think the verdict's still out, though. The verdict's still out on the coaching, on the offensive line. The verdict's still out on the players. Can they execute? They've been put in a position to do what they're supposed to do, and they got the stars, and they've got all the things, and they've got all the resources that they need. Can they put it together? You know, I think you saw glimpses of – good things, right? But we got to put it together and see what they can do. And this week's a test.
Well, yes, we will know. We will know Saturday.
Yeah.
Right after kickoff around 3:45.
We'll know what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, I really wish they would kick off at 3:30 instead of, you know, how
instead of 3:47.
You know how this goes, man.
Yeah.
And it's based on what time the other game gets done.
Yeah.
And, you know, but
and now with ESPN controlling all of it.
Yeah.
They'll have that little, you know, yellow in the bottom right hand corner. Georgia, Tennessee is kicking off at
4:08
on ESPN News.
Yeah. Look, as a casual observer of Georgia football, I'm not concerned right now.
Yeah.
I said this in, I think, week one. I have a lot more faith in Kirby than just about any other coach in college football to have his team right. If you're betting on one team to show up and one not, I'm betting on Georgia to show up.
Yeah.
And I'm betting on Kirby's game plan.
Sure.
I mean, he's built up the equity. We've seen it since he was a defensive coordinator at Alabama and now in his, 9 years or so at Georgia?
Right, yeah. You know, I heard somebody say this week, this is in relation to recruiting, but the safest bet still in college football is Kirby Smart.
Right.
He's the safest bet.
He's proven it.
He's proven it. He is, you know, this was in relation to, like, NIL. Do you take more money? Do you go to the team that's going to develop you? The safest bet currently is Kirby Smart on the recruiting trail. The safest bet still, I think, in game management is Kirby right now. And so leaning on him to be able to make the right calls and put the right folks in the right spot. And, you know, if somebody needs to be moved around, that he does that. We have seen Kirby be loyal to some folks who in the fans' eyes were struggling, right? And I think we have to remind ourselves as fans, that's what we are, that we're not at every other practice, right? We're not seeing what goes on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, right? We don't see what happens there. And there's certainly, this goes for all coaches. You know, we'll talk about Billy Napier in a little while, talk about Mike Norvell at times, Kalen DeBoer at times. In no way, shape, or form are they going to put a guy in that they believe can cost them their job.
Sure.
Like, we care because we're fans. They care because it pays the bills.
Right.
Now, it's and very high salary, but like
their legacy and all
right,
that.
Right. There's more to it. So I can't, you know, people say, oh, Kirby's just playing him because that's his friend or, you know, whatever. Well, maybe that's true, but I don't believe it's true because, like, Kirby's got to feed his family. And I get that he'd get a big buyout and all that kind of stuff. But, like, they're going to play the guy that gives them the best chance to win. These guys have egos. They're not out there, you know, for pats on the back.
Right. Yeah, you can't be a coach at that level and not have an ego.
Yeah.
For better or for worse. Like, it just is what it is. Along those same lines, though, I have seen, like, inexplicable personnel decisions. You brought up Mike Norvell. So one of the best players right now in Tallahassee on the defensive side is Earl Little Jr. He's playing great.
Mm-hmm.
Earl Little was not, I mean, there were times he didn't even see the field last year.
Yeah.
Now, and we know what that product looked like.
Right.
It's not like he was, he was sitting behind, future NFL draft picks. It was just that he wasn't part of the game plan. And you ask yourself, how can that be? Like, how did you
see what you see now? Yeah.
And not use him. Maybe he had massive growth in the offseason.
Sure.
Maybe he had, maybe he grew up as a person and all of a sudden started doing the right things to earn playing time. As you said, we're not at practice. We don't see that. But there are some times where these high-paid coaches that want to win the game will have personnel decisions that you go, man, where's that been all this time?
Right.
And it's probably like you said, we just don't see the.
These guys, you don't see, is the guy going to class? Kirby's big on tucking your shirt in. You've probably seen some of that. Like, is he just not a team guy?
Right.
Is there some reason why he doesn't trust the player to be there? Norvell the same way, DeBoer the same way. I mean, they're making this decision that they believe is best for the team and ultimately best for them to continue coaching at their school.
Right.
They don't want to get fired.
Oh, yeah. I guarantee you. Listen, Kirby doesn't need the money. Kirby could go home tomorrow, when it comes to dollars and cents. Kirby's deal now is winning football. Like, he wants to win every football game because first of all, he wants another natty, right?
Yeah.
Who doesn't? If you're not coaching for a natty, then why are you here at this level? And then secondly, I think a lot of it's a legacy thing for these guys. You know, they want to be known as winners.
We don't want to be the guy, like, in Norvell's shoes. You don't want to be just another guy at Florida State, right? You want to be Bobby Bowden.
Yeah.
Like, you want to be a guy like him. You want to be a Jimbo. Like, you don't want to just be that other. You don't want to be Willie Taggart.
Yeah.
But you're trying to further your legacy and for your time at your school to mean something. And that's not dollars and cents. That's just how these guys are built.
Yeah.
And I think you have to coach in the world that we live in of NIL and recruiting and paying players and all the things. Like, they're doing it for more than the money. Because if it was for the money, then they just hang it up and do something different.
Yeah. They'd retire.
Yeah.
All right. So another big picture review. We'll talk about the Florida State East Texas A&M game.
All the names.
I think they used to be like Texas A&M Commerce or somebody like that. That's why you've never
heard
of East
the
Texas.
Name. Yeah.
The most impressive part is Florida State didn't punt in this game.
Yeah.
They did have a fumble by their fourth string quarterback.
The fourth string gets in, it's all right.
That kept a former walk on. They kept them from, scoring on whatever it would have been, 12 drives out of 12. And then that one ended up resulting in the field goal. So they fumble it down around the 15 or so. And then East Texas A&M gets a big play or two. And next thing you know, they're in field goal range. I was really pulling for the shutout.
Yeah.
Because we haven't had one in so long. And there's a cool tradition in Tallahassee where if the defensive coordinator's unit, we'll say it like that, if defense pitches a shutout,
mm-hmm.
then they get a spiked baseball.
Huh.
And so this was something, I think it was Chip Baker was the guy's name. But anyway, he's affiliated with the baseball department at Florida State. And he would present Mickey Andrews or, whatever. Mark Stoops might have even gotten one, he would present the defensive coordinator with a baseball with a nail in it and, the date written. It's just a little trophy for the shutout. I really wanted that because shutouts are so rare, man. I mean, what are the odds you pitch another one?
That's right. You say, 2009 was the last one, maybe?
No, it was like 16 or 17, something like that. I know Pruitt got one because Florida State beat Maryland in 2013, 63-0.
Okay.
And so Maryland came into that game ranked in the top 20.
Yeah.
And they had upset a couple of teams through the first month of the season. And it was supposed to be the quote, big test for Florida State. Then they won it 63.
They won it, yeah.
I think they were up 35 to nothing after the first quarter. But anyway, I wanted the shutout from a fan perspective, and I would love for Tony White in his second game at Florida State, because, by the way, I don't think he's going to be there long.
Yeah, he's a head coach in waiting somewhere.
Yes.
Especially after what's going on the last two games. And if that continues.
Somebody floated a good point, too. He may actually be an NFL defensive coordinator next year. Like, he's that kind of.
Yeah.
So, who knows how long we've got him.
Sure.
And how many opportunities he's going to have at a shutout anyway.
Sure.
I was very impressed. The second thing I would like to point out is, so the first team offense, you know, they get up 35 to nothing or something like that in the second quarter. And this is when they start rotating in second string guys. And the second string quarterback was not Brock Glenn. Hmm. So Brock Glenn has been the backup.
Yeah.
You know, he was the guy that played against Georgia in the Orange Bowl. We're not going to hold that against him.
No.
As a freshman there. That was a weird circumstance he got thrown into. But then he also got opportunities last year.
Sure.
And he's never really taken the reins.
Highly rated, too, coming in.
Yeah, former four-star, yeah. I think. Everybody likes Brock Glenn. He's stuck around through some hard times.
Right.
When other folks have transferred. Brock Glenn is like a junior now. Presumably your second-string quarterback. He's not the first guy off the bench.
Oh.
It's a true freshman.
Okay.
Named Kevin Sperry.
That's right.
Also former four-star, but he's a true freshman. And he's the guy that comes in with the second-team offense, leads them to a few scores. Brock Glenn then comes in, leads them to a few scores. Yeah, everybody scores.
Right. you get a score. You get a score.
Yeah. But so Kevin Sperry, he throws a touchdown pass to Croma.
Right. Yeah. First one for him.
Yep.
South Georgia guy.
And then he also throws a touchdown pass to a true freshman wide receiver, Javon Boggs.
Yep.
Who's a starter with the ones.
Right.
But it might give Florida State fans a little glimpse if those guys stick around into what the offense might look like next year if Castellanos isn't around.
Sure.
Some of these young guys that might take the next step.
And that was probably some of the frustration on the Georgia game, too, is you hope in a game like this to see some of those guys, right? Because you don't get to see them in SEC play. You don't get to see them very often. It's hard to tell in a spring game what things really are. So you're hoping to see guys like Puglisi, and you're hoping to see some of these running backs and other guys come in the game. Well, when you let Austin Peay hang around, you don't get to see the guys you think, well, man, it sure would be great to see what that guy's arm looks like, or how fast that receiver is, or how good that defensive lineman might be, because the coaches aren't going to put the twos in if it's still a two-score game.
Right.
And so you never really got to that point with Georgia.
And you got this game coming up. It would have been nice to get some of those
dudes.
To get
some rest. Yeah. The more plays you have, the more chance it is you get rolled up on or, you know, whatever. I mean, in the high school game this week that I follow, one of the starters got hurt in warm-ups.
Yeah.
You know, and so just more risk there. But anyway, I think all in all, the takeaway from those three games is that two of the teams did what they were supposed to do, exactly what they were supposed to, probably more than they were supposed to do, and question marks for Georgia's offense, and can they get it done? And you know, all these teams now have games upcoming in the next 2 weeks that will continue to tell the tale of their season more than any number of snaps against Austin Peay or ULM or East Texas A&M, Southern, whatever.
Right, yeah. All right, so games that were big games, well, let's look at the upset in Gainesville.
Ooh-wee.
USF taking down the Gators.
Yeah. I had said last week the game was going to be close. I thought it would be. USF is a very experienced team. Had a lot of guys that hung around from previous seasons. Alex Golich is really, really good football coach. So I thought it would have been close, but I thought that ultimately Florida's depth would have just worn on them and that Florida would win late. I think that's what I kind of wrote here was Florida wins late.
Mm-hmm.
And it was looking that way. That they were gonna. It was more of a Florida hangs on late.
Right.
And then you get the spitting personal foul. And then you get some timeout blunders from Florida's head coach. And you're just like, is this a shoe-throwing situation all over again?
Yeah.
And it turned into being that. And you're like, man, this could be that pivotal turning point that, like, oh, no.
Yeah. Well, so I was very, I shouldn't say disappointed because, you know, I wasn't exactly pulling for the Florida Gators to win the game, but I was I was very surprised with Napier's or you know, he's calling the plays, so we'll give him the credit. I was surprised with his play calling.
Yeah.
Once Florida got the ball back.
Yeah.
So 2 minutes and some change. I think it was probably 250-ish or so. Florida's got the ball and the lead.
Yeah.
And they're on the 40.
Right.
And this thing's over.
It's done.
Get two first downs. Make USF burn their timeouts. Use the two-minute warning if you have to. At least get past that so USF can't use it.
Yep.
And we get two passes and a two-yard run and a punt.
Yeah.
And 27 seconds has
goes off the clock. I just don't understand. I don't. When you have the offensive line that they say they have,
mm-hmm.
you've got two really good running backs, right? It goes back to what I said a minute ago about Georgia. You ought to be able to run the ball three times and get 8-9 yards. At least give yourself a thought for going on fourth.
Right.
And they didn't even – it just – I don't know. Does he trust Lagway that much? He can make those plays? Like, what's the
– I mean, you've also got a quarterback that can move. And,
yeah.
You know,
if it breaks down, let him – one read and go.
Yeah.
Like, stay in bounds and –
or give him the option, hey, we're going to roll you out right here, and if it's not there, take off, you know.
Like we said, we're not X's and O's guys, but goodness, that seems like a big picture.
I think if you were to ask some of the head coaches that you know if they would have handled it differently, they would probably tell you yes.
Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah.
And I think if Napier were to, if you could just get him to be honest and it not be a recorded podcast or public information, that he'd say, yeah, I probably should have, you know, whatever.
Oh yeah. Well, ultimately leads to a loss, and obviously we're sitting here several days later saying all what he should have done, and we don't know what he had. But like, goodness gracious, it even seemed like in the moment you were like, just hand it off.
Yeah, run the ball, man. You know,
even if you lose yards, you're using clock.
Right.
Like, it just
still might punt, but you know, use a minute and a half of this, and then like you said, once USF gets the ball back. Two personal foul penalties, one of which is spitting. And I mean,
we saw that twice last week, once in the NFL, from somebody who's known to make bad decisions.
Yeah. I just, some of the head coaches that you know, how do you think they would respond to a player getting that penalty? Not necessarily the spitting part of it, but
just a penalty in that moment. Yeah.
It's not an aggression penalty. You know, sometimes coaches are okay with an aggression penalty.
Yeah. If you grab a face mask, like you're upset, you're like, oh man, you know, it was an effort play,
right?
This was just being dumb. I mean, you just call it what it is. Just being dumb, being selfish, and ultimately cost his team a game.
Yeah.
I mean, they may have completed some other plays, but like you have to think that's a huge contributing factor in them being able to get to field goal range,
right?
And even have a chance for a Grammatica to kick a field goal,
right? And not only get into field goal range, make it basically an extra point.
It was an extra point. I was like, are they gonna try to score a touchdown?
I thought they were gonna score at first. I'm like, oh,
well that last one down there. I was like, oh, he's just gonna like go get in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't. He was trying to score.
I saw some people saying they should have let him score.
Well, now I said that to Katie. We were sitting there, and I said, he needs to let him. Like they're trying. Let him score. At least now you get a chance to get it back, and you do have the dudes that can get you some, you know, some yards and. It just, I don't know. That whole thing was just a debacle.
Do you remember in the 2013 National Championship game, Florida State versus Auburn, Trey Mason is the running back, and he trucks Jalen Ramsey on his way to a touchdown score to put Auburn up with like a minute and 40 left to go.
Right.
Jalen Ramsey didn't let him score. Okay,
he scored
all
run
on
over.
His own. Yeah. But it was the best thing that happened because if he gets tackled there at the 20.
Right. You may have 35 seconds to play.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, in this case, but, you know, hindsight's 20/20. Florida's got plenty to look at through the windshield.
Oh, yeah. They got the person in the front seat.
Instead of worrying about what's in the rear view. I mean, that's we're going to talk about their game with LSU coming up in just a moment. Let's move on to I think the Oklahoma-Michigan game says a lot about Oklahoma. It also says that Michigan's got some growing up to do around their quarterback.
Yeah, I think the only comment there was him going into that environment for his first big start. I don't know what anybody would have expected from him. You know, you got Dave Portnoy that thought he was like the Heisman guy, but like I think he performed about like any other normal freshman quarterback would perform in a pretty hostile environment. I mean, I think Oklahoma is kind of one of those teams on the come up.
Yeah.
And Venables is a great defensive mind that just had a game plan ready for a young quarterback.
Let's move on to our preview section. One game that I've been pointing to for a week or two, and now I'm pointing to it with like a big foam finger, is the Clemson at Georgia Tech game.
Yeah.
Ever since Ireland last year, where Georgia Tech, you know, bullied Florida State the way they did, stumbled in a few games down the stretch, but then took Georgia to, what was it, 7 overtime?
Something crazy. It was 7 or 8.
They earned a lot of people's respect as that team that, like, man, you just really don't want to play Tech. And Haynes King didn't play last week.
Yeah, they had Aaron Filo came in and played really well.
Threw for almost 400 yards.
Right. He's Georgia's leading, the state of Georgia's leading high school passer. Broke records made by Trevor Lawrence. Deshaun Watson, those are the names of records that he's broken.
And this is the backup at Georgia Tech.
And this is the backup at Georgia Tech, So
I'm looking at this game, and I'm you know, Clemson's down 16-0 to Troy at the half, and I'm thinking Clemson's about to lose.
Oh, I was 100% thinking they're going to lose.
And
the rain also, I think, saved them. Their rain delay allowed Dabo to chew on them a little bit.
Yeah. Now they've got to go to Atlanta to play a team that's going to punch them in the mouth.
Noon game.
Yeah. Small stadium.
Yeah. High school stadium.
Yeah. It's a beautiful stadium, but yeah.
I've never been there. I'd like to go.
I've not been in it, but I'm looking side-eyed at Clemson in this game.
You know, are we picking now? We can pick now?
Yeah, why not? Yeah, for the record, Brian Howell picked Clemson.
Clemson. Okay. So, the biggest question mark is Clemson's a lot like Georgia. I really think they're very similar, very stout, strong defense, but question marks on the offense. And where they're different is Klubnik was, in many cases, some on the podcast, Heisman favorite, front runner.
You. Yeah.
And he's got two touchdown passes and two interceptions, and he's just not looking like himself. My dad's a Clemson fan, and he's really a Dabo fan, but Clemson because of that. And man, he was frustrated last week with the play call, and he's an X's and O's guy.
Right.
Yeah, that's what he does for a living. That's how he paid the bills and put food on the table for our family. But, it's frustrated with the offense. Just can Klubnik get it going? Can he get the downfield pass? They've got the one running back who's a converted receiver, right? Who's not a shifty back. He's a power guy. I think that type of game is going to play right into the hands of Georgia Tech. And now you kind of have a two-headed monster at quarterback. If they need to throw the ball, bring the guy in. Mm. If they got to run the ball, you've got Haynes King, who is pretty special at that. Give me Georgia Tech in a close game.
Ooh. I am taking Georgia Tech as well, based solely on the vibes.
Just the vibes.
Just the vibes. I could absolutely see Clemson winning this game. I am not picking Georgia Tech to blow them out, but I just think this is – I've seen other metrics that show that this might end up being a close game. Give me like a 28-27 Tech win.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. Like, it's gonna be within a touchdown. And I think the spread's got Clemson favored by 3.5, which essentially is a push.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're giving Georgia Tech some credit for being at home. Clemson's taking some points away because of their struggles on offense. So,
all right, let's move on to the Wisconsin at Alabama game. This was a big win for Bama in the second half last year. Like you said, it was close in the first half. Yep. Bama pulled away. We had question marks about Bama before they played UL Monroe last Saturday.
I think the questions still remain. I think the same. This is the week you answer some questions, because Wisconsin, on paper, should have comparable talent, right? They're at least Power 5, Power 4 talent. It's not ULM.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not Sun Belt talent.
They have some dudes.
They've got guys that Bama would say, I might have him.
Yeah.
You know,
can crack the two deep or something.
That's right. But I do think ultimately Bama wins the game a lot like last year. They ultimately win on just sheer, they just have better players. The blue chip ratio that we talked about before, like, it wins out in some of this, in this case.
they're also at home.
Yep, they're at home.
And
they're favored by 19.5, which I'm not sure they cover. Mm-hmm. If we're picking against the spread, which I don't think we are, we're just picking straight up.
Yeah.
If we're picking against the spread, I'm not sure they cover 19.5 points. That's three touchdowns. Like, you're not going to.
I could see this being a 38-20 game.
Yeah.
You know, it would have to be basically 41 to 20, something like that to cover the spread.
Yeah.
Seems like a lot.
Yeah, I think that what's the Luke Fickle? He's he's you know, defensive minded guy.
He was Ohio
State. He was Cincinnati. Like, he's got some of this defensive pedigree. I just don't see him and that team giving up that many points. I
mean, yeah,
and I don't. I think there's been some question mark about Ryan Williams. Is he back? Is he not back? You know, we'll never know till we get to the game. I think I told you the other day. Ryan Williams has not caught a touchdown pass since Mercer last year. He hasn't had a 100-yard receiving game since Georgia last year.
And Ryan Williams disappointed a lot of people against Florida State.
Yeah.
So his 2025, he didn't play last week.
Right.
His 2025 has already been a disappointment. Now, this could be his breakout
maybe
campaign.
Maybe it's his come-out game, yeah.
I will say this, if Bama plays with the same energy versus Wisconsin as they did against Florida State, if Ryan Williams is scared to go across the middle against Wisconsin, like in my opinion, if they use him in the slot as much as they did against Florida State, I just don't think he's that dude based on what I saw in one game. Give me Bama to win, but if they come out lackluster and them being at home, the whole the world is against us, everybody thinks we stink, we have to prove we're Bama again mentality, I think will resonate and will win the day and win the game.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of people are going to use Florida State's, not necessarily their scheme, right? Because everybody's scheme on defense is different. But use, hey, if you hit Bama in the mouth early, they've shown they'll fold up.
Right.
Right. And so I think a lot of teams going forward, until they prove otherwise, teams that are capable of it, ULM was not capable of hitting them in the mouth. But teams like Wisconsin, like Georgia, like Vandy and down the line, they're going to use that, hey, if you hit him in the mouth early.
Let's see if they can get up.
If you hit Ryan Williams one time when he comes across the middle, he might not want to do it again. He's shown he won't do it again.
Right.
So make him show you different. And I think you'll see some of that early. You'll see a Wisconsin team that's probably motivated a little bit by that, which is why I think it'll stay tight early.
Let's skip the next one on my list. We're going to do that one last.
Okay.
All right. Let's do USF at Miami.
Ooh, USF is hot.
Yeah.
It's
16.5 points, I think, again.
Yeah, I saw it 15.5 today on ESPN bet or whatever they call it. It's another test for Miami. You didn't think that on paper.
Right.
You know, coming into the year. But I think USF's experience is something that's going to keep them hanging around. I've seen some projections for them to be the Group of Five team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of like Boise was last year in the playoff. Obviously, I mean, they've beaten two top 25 teams thus far this year. I do think Miami wins, though.
I think Miami is a surefire. So I think you can question whether or not Florida is a legit top 25 team.
Yeah.
And the same thing with Boise State. Like, those two teams probably won't end the season in the top 25.
Sure.
I think Miami is a legitimate top 10.
Oh, sure. No doubt.
Team. So I think this is a different animal for USF to go to Coral Gables after two tough games in a row. Now we're going down here to play our third and probably toughest challenge to date.
Right.
I'm taking Miami. I think.
What did Brian take in Bama? We didn't mention that one.
He took Bama.
Yeah.
He's all SEC, I think, is what he wrote. SEC for life.
There we go.
But, yeah, I'm taking Miami. I think USF will give them a fight. I think Miami's ultimately just better.
Yeah, I think that Miami's defense looked really good against Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
What was that guy's name? Bain, I think. Mm-hmm.
Harold Bain.
Harold Bain Jr. Or something. So, yeah, I think they're – and USF is now not going to sneak up on Miami.
Right.
I mean, had they lost to Florida
– Or if this was the first game of the year.
It's something different scenario. I think now Miami is going to this game eyes wide open as to what they're capable of.
Also, Miami knows what it's like to have everything you want in front of you.
Yep.
And then having an inexplicable loss.
Yep.
Happened to them a couple of times last year.
That's right.
And I'm not a big Cristobal fan, but if I'm Mario Cristobal, I know this is a new team. I know it's a new season and last year doesn't matter, but guys, we're winning this game today. And
right.
And you have to stay focused. We will win the game if you play your game.
Right.
All right. Let's look at Florida at LSU.
You know, this is a rivalry that gets forgotten about a lot
one.
In the SEC that's really, really good.
Is this one of their permanent opponents now?
It is. It's one of the, it's their so it's Florida. LSU Florida is kind of like Georgia Auburn.
Mm.
Right? Because you have LSU and Bama have their Florida, Georgia have their thing. But this is like that kind of cross divisional opponent, right? And they do it every year. And it was the aforementioned shoe throwing game from several years ago. But man, this is one where Florida's in the corner, backed into the corner. It's is LSU the real deal, right? They beat Clemson, but we're still questioning Clemson some. This is a game that I think both have a lot to prove. LSU's favored by 8.5, so more than a touchdown. They are at home in Death Valley at night, which they say is really extremely difficult to play in. So LSU by 10.
LSU. I'm writing by 10 by that, too, so we don't forget that. LSU by 10. This is exactly the type of game that Billy Napier can go win and silence a bunch of people.
In a hurry.
And
was the LSU's ranked what right now? Third or fourth?
Third, like that. Yeah. So, I mean, you go on the road at night to LSU and win a football game, even in years when LSU's not good.
Right. It doesn't matter. You beat LSU in Baton Rouge.
Yeah. And so I can absolutely see an upset scenario here for the Gators.
Yeah.
For LSU by the Gators. In reality, like that's just the vibes. In reality, if I'm looking at this and saying, okay, which team is the better team? I think LSU's the better team. LSU's at home. I think Brian Kelly might have, righted some wrongs by winning that season opener versus Clemson. Yep. Now, don't put it past Brian Kelly to lose a game
I was going to say, Brian Kelly has been prone to fumble a game a little bit in some decision-making. So you're not picking this one on vibes at all?
No. I'm going on just who I think is the better team here. I'm going LSU.
Yeah.
All right. Let's
What'd Brian have?
SEC for life.
Well, he had to pick one of them.
That's right. LSU. LSU. He's not going to pick the Gators.
No, absolutely not.
Unless they play Georgia, and then he'd be like, man, Florida.
The best team ever. Yeah. We can talk about him because he's not here, and he can't stop us.
He's my buddy. He knows I'm messing with him. All right. Georgia at Tennessee, 3:30 game, ABC, right?
Yep, ABC. That's still weird. Still weird.
Yeah.
Should be CBS.
Supposed to be CBS.
That's right.
You miss Vern and Gary?
No, I don't miss them.
I guess this will be probably Herb Street. And
yeah, I guess because it got changed to the game day. That was like a late change. I think game day was supposed to go to like West Virginia, but they get upset last week and they like changed it in the middle of the game. And they're going to Georgia, Tennessee, which was kind of shocking. I've been to you've been to Knoxville, like to a game?
Never been there.
It's an interesting place. Now, we went the year it was 17, I guess it was, 41-0. That was the last time I remember a Georgia shutout. And we were out eating that the night before, and you're just trying to get the vibe there in Knoxville. And it was they were kind of down on Butch Jones, kind of like Florida folks are on Napier right now. And it was, can y'all just beat us bad enough?
Oh,
just to get rid of him.
Yeah.
And like it happened, but yeah, this game, Georgia favored by 6.5 at Tennessee. The good thing for Georgia, and this was set early on, it wasn't a night game at Tennessee. So you don't give those, mountaineers a little bit of time to get a little courage in them. But it'll be a hostile environment, certainly early. It's one of these things where Georgia has to start fast. I think if you start fast, you kind of take the crowd out of it a little bit. You still put that – I mean, Kirby has had Tennessee's number. I mean, aside from the 2016 Hail Mary, he certainly has had Josh Heupel's number.
I saw a stat the other day where he's held Heupel's defenses to like 21 points below their season average.
Yeah, it's an insane number.
Yeah.
But now, I think people aren't expecting much out of Tennessee's offense, but I think people are expecting a good bit out of Tennessee's defense. So I think that they've, from what I've read a little bit, and I think you are talking on the radio some today, Tennessee's defense has been pretty good. Georgia's offense with that big giant red question mark. So we'll see. But I've said this before on the podcast, defense travels. Georgia's defense is special, I think, this year. Give me Georgia. Ultimately come out on top in this game.
So I think Georgia's the better team. I don't know that that difference is as big as it has been in years past.
I don't think so either.
And that's because of the question marks on Georgia's offense currently. That could change any week. Like I could see Georgia's offense all of a sudden looking like, you know, it should. But until it does, there's a question mark there. Tennessee's the home team. If all things are relatively equal, let's just say that, you know, on a neutral field that Georgia's a touchdown better, this is a home game for Tennessee. It is, by my calculation, the first road game for Gunnar Stockton.
Yep.
Is that right?
That's true.
Not counting either the playoff game
or the second half of
the SEC championship,
yeah.
So, I mean, I think Georgia wins this game 6-7 times out of 10.
Yeah.
Something like that. But so far, me, you, and Brian have picked the exact same on all of these picks except for the Clemson Tech game. So Brian's got Clemson, and you and I chose Tech.
Yep.
So far, you and I have been on the same page about the other games, and we're on the same page with Brian with the exception of that one. So if I'm going to overtake you guys in the standings, so currently as the standings sit, Kyle, you're in the lead at 4-4.
500.
I'm behind you at 3-5.
So you got to pick somewhere different.
I got to pick somewhere different.
It's okay to say that you think that Tennessee's better than Georgia and you're just not doing it for this reason.
I'm not saying that, but I am taking Tennessee in this one. If for no other reason than if I get it right, I gain a game on you.
Yeah, well, you know, and I think that there are people, I think you look on ESPN right now, kind of in their prognostication, like the little wheel of whatever. I mean, people are picking Tennessee, I think it's like 55% to 45, you know. Folks are kind of, I think a lot of it's just down on Georgia's offense.
Yeah.
They've seen Aguilar for Tennessee have a really, you know, good start to the year. Throwing, you know, he's more of a quarterback than a thrower.
Mm-hmm.
And you've had Nico, who's been a thrower. It's more of the Hendon Hooker style where he can get in the offense and do what Josh Heupel wants him to do. You know, so I just, it really is, in some ways, a toss-up. So we'll see.
There are people out there listening right now that say, I knew he was going to pick Tennessee. He hates Georgia. It's not about that. I promise I don't hate Georgia. Like, I mean, I will say there have been times where I have hated some Georgia. I shouldn't say hated. I have really disliked some Georgia fans. But listen, I'm taking Tennessee here mainly to try to catch a game, catch Kyle by a game in the standings. I would not be surprised if Georgia comes out and stomps a mud hole in Tennessee.
Yeah, and the same could be said if Georgia's offense continues the way it's been, it might get ugly for Georgia too. I mean, you got to think there it could happen on the reverse side.
All right, so let's look at some week two superlatives.
Yeah.
Okay, so
week two was a down week for games in general. Yeah.
Player of the week.
So I got John Mateer, quarterback at Oklahoma.
Okay. Good one.
270 passing yards, 74 rushing yards. So right at 350, mm-hmm. 344 total yards for his team. Three total touchdowns. He looks like Johnny Football. He looks like a Brett Favre out there. Throws the ball when he probably shouldn't, but then it's really fun to watch, you know. He's just a fun player, but last week had a great game in the marquee matchup of the week when there was nothing else to watch. Pretty impressive.
That's a good one. I'm going with Deuce Robinson, wide receiver at Florida State.
Yeah.
Think of all the wide receivers at Florida State in the history of the program. Think of all the times they've played the East Texas A&M or whoever. Like, everybody plays cupcakes every year, and so these are stat padding games a lot of times. He's the first Florida State wide receiver to ever have 160 receiving yards in the first quarter.
Wow. And if you're the first to do anything, that's special. If you're the first to do anything receiving at Florida State when you got Anquan Boldin and Peter Warwick. And,
right. Yeah.
Names that are names.
I mean, even Keon Coleman, who had a great first game there against LSU and was good for Florida State for one season. Like, he never had a quarter like this. So I'm giving the superlative here to Deuce Robinson, who, by the way, may end up being an NFL draft pick after one season at Florida State if he keeps this up.
Because he was one that was at USC. Yeah. Is that right? Kind of highly rated out of USC.
Yep.
I remember Georgia being kind of hot on him and Florida State being hot on him as a high school recruit.
As a tight end.
Right, as a tight end, receiving tight end.
Mm-hmm.
He ends up going to USC,
mm-hmm.
kind of gets forgotten about, doesn't do anything, and then comes back over to Florida State.
6'6", 240.
Yeah.
And runs a 4.47.
Yeah, that's nice.
That'll play.
Yeah.
All right, play of the week.
I didn't have a play of the week. There was anything that really stood out to me spectacular.
Mine is the spit.
Mistake of the week.
Spit gate, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
It was a game changer there.
Yeah.
So I'm going with Florida's, you know, whoever he was, defensive player.
Yeah, he's in trouble now, whoever it is.
Yeah. Biggest surprise?
Mine was Clemson's offense, no showing.
Okay.
I think the first game we thought, okay, LSU's defense is pretty special. You know, we were talking, I think last week we were talking up, man, is LSU's defense back?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Blake Baker, he's got him going. You know, Perkins has found his spot. Maybe that's true, but maybe Clemson's offense is just bad.
Right.
And I think after this week, I was just really surprised that they didn't, with Klubnik having him and the experience he's got, having the experience at receiver they have, you know, I thought it would have bounced.
Biggest improvements from week one to week two.
Yeah, it's... should have been more. And that I was just really surprised that they didn't show up.
Yeah. Mine's going to be the USF over Florida.
Yeah.
When I even though I did pick USF last week, you know, that's still a big surprise. They go, yeah. It's first time that Florida has lost to a team, an unranked team from the state of Florida, not named Florida or Miami.
Right.
Maybe ever.
It might. Yeah. They didn't play they didn't play UCF in the year that UCF won the national championship.
Right.
Quotes.
Yeah. So I'll use that as a. All right. So speaking of Florida, we've got just a few minutes left here. The date circled on the calendar for me is October 5th.
Yep.
That is the Sunday after Florida plays Texas
at home.
At home. So between now and then, they've got at LSU, at Miami. And
they have an off week.
Yeah, and then Texas.
They have an off week, I think, because it's September 20th, then October 4th. So there's got to be an off week in there.
I think there is. So does Billy make it to October the 5th as the head coach of the Florida Gators?
So I think the question you have to ask yourself, if he goes 1-2, in these next three games, which I think is likely. That's probably the most likely scenario.
Okay.
The least likely scenario is that they go 3-0.
Yes.
The most likely scenario, based off what we saw last week, is that they go 1-2.
With 0-3 right behind that.
With 0-3 pretty close behind it, but I think 1-2.
Okay.
If he goes 1-2, do you think he keeps his job? And now you got to remember, they're playing LSU, who's number 3. Miami, who's ranked number 5. Texas, who is 7.
I think it all depends on how close these games are.
How they actually play
in the
games.
If you go to LSU and lose on a last-second field goal.
True.
28-27.
It's not just, what you're saying is not just wins and losses.
Right.
Now, if it's 0-3.
If you go to LSU and get beat by 30.
Yeah.
He might not make it.
It'll be a tarmac situation.
Because you've got these other games on the horizon. You've got Miami coming up. You've got Texas coming up. I'm going to put the over under at, you know, he's got to win 2. I think he's got to win 2 of the next 3 unless they're all close.
I think that people would forgive him for losing to Texas. LSU and Miami.
What if Texas?
It's also like a rival. Those are rivalries that you just have. Like, just like Georgia, does it goes a long way in your season to beat Florida. If you have a terrible season and you beat Florida, Tennessee, and Auburn, you're going to be all right.
Right.
Right. If you're at Alabama and you have a bad season and you beat Auburn, you know what? You still beat Auburn.
Right.
You know, it, so I think losing to Texas is a little bit more forgivable, though it's at home. It's going to be tough to beat LSU and Miami on the road. It really, even though Miami is not really a feared road matchup, I think they'll be ready for that game. And I just, I don't know. If he has to win two, he better hope Carson Beck from last year shows up.
So I'm pulling up Texas's schedule because between now and then they play UTEP and Sam Houston. Okay. Arch looked better against San Jose State.
Yeah.
But what if they have an Austin Peay type game before the Florida game? And all of a sudden, maybe everybody's going, man, what if Texas really
is not good?
Is not, and then they, you know, they lose to Texas. I think that in that scenario, it's not forgivable.
It's not just as cut and dry. I hear what you're saying. It's not just as cut and dry as
yeah.
You win two, you're still, you know.
I don't know, man.
I hate it. I do. I think I said last year, like my family has some ties to the Napier family between my dad and Billy's dad were good friends. His dad passed away several years ago. Billy's brother coached with my dad for several years. My dad stays in contact with some of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Billy's other brother's a coach here in the state of Georgia that my dad knows really well. So personally, I would hate for him to lose his job.
Right.
As a Georgia fan, I also would hate for him to lose his job.
Right.
Right? Because everybody's like, oh, yeah, you get rid of your rivals lose. Well,
who you know what they're going to do?
They're going to go get a really good coach.
Yeah.
And what if it is the coach that is the right guy? Right? What if it's Urban Meyer again?
Yeah.
Not actually Urban Meyer, but sure. What if it has that effect? So, you know, you kind of want your rivals to not have the elite.
You want them to be just good enough to keep that guy.
That's right. Yeah. Like, keep the guy. Like, I want Georgia Tech to keep Jeff Collins forever.
Yeah.
But you know, I would hate it for him, but I think he's just in a tough spot. And losing to South Florida, he could have lost these next three.
Right.
And been fine because they said, oh, they're all top 10 matchups, still building, young quarterback, da 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 da. You lost to South Florida.
Yeah.
Now you put yourself in a you have to win situation.
Yeah. It used up any slack in the rope at that point. I mean, like, it's tight.
Well, and look, let's say he makes it past October 4th. The 11th, they play Texas A&M at Texas A&M. Then they have Mississippi State, who just beat Arizona State.
Mm-hmm.
Then they have Georgia and Jacksonville. Like, their next six games, maybe does he make it November the 8th? That's Kentucky. Like, goodness gracious.
Yeah.
They're in a bad spot.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he didn't make the schedule.
No.
You know,
he didn't pick when Miami was going to get good again.
Right, and that's why you had to win the USF game.
Yeah.
You had to win the USF game because you might not get many more wins. There aren't a whole lot of easy wins left on the schedule.
I mean, I'm looking at their schedule right now. So they've got 1, 2, 4, 5, 6, 7. Wow. They've got 8 games left against ranked teams. They only have 10 games left.
I'd be curious to see how many of those teams finish the
season
ranked.
I'm saying currently ranked.
Yes.
Currently ranked teams.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good caveat.
Well, and 2 weeks ago, one of those teams that's ranked in the top 10 wasn't there.
Yeah, Florida State.
Right. So, I mean, like 2 weeks ago, that game didn't look nearly as tough as it does now.
But you have a Mississippi State team on the other hand of that who's kind of on the rise and win a couple more games, and then maybe they are in the top 25.
Right.
But they've got a tough road to hoe, and we'll see. It could get messy in a hurry down in Gainesville.
Yeah. You know, he did this last year.
Yeah.
Going into November.
He galvanized the team. And
leading up to it, we were all like,
Brian Wynn said, Billy's got his stuff in a barn.
Yeah, better go find him a barn. He might better find another one. We'll see what that looks like. We'll see. Well, that's the best part about this. They got to play the game.
Got to play the game. It's not played on paper.
That's right. It's been another episode of the Southern Football Report. Thank you so very much for tuning in. As always, you can download this on your favorite podcast app and take it with you. Also, you can listen to us on Saturday mornings on the Flint Media family of radio stations. Thank you once again for tuning in. For Brian Howell, who is out of the seat, I will say it. Thank you for listening. And also, Kyle, thanks for being in.
Absolutely, guys. See y'all next time.
We'll talk to y'all next week.